This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3549 for Thursday the 10th of March 2022. Today's show is entitled, Linux in Laws S01E51, Git and Static Site Generators, and is part of the series, Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monocrogue, and is about 53 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Git and Static Site Generators.
Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. Welcome to Linux in Laws, Season 1.
It's definitely Season 1.
Episode 51, yes.
Oh, you've well done. You got the number. Well done.
Perfect. Martin, how are things tonight?
Damp and drizzly, but...
Damp? Let me guess, you're still living in this splinter country called the Kingdom.
I think it's out there. Is your audio playing up?
I mean, you can't really call this United anyway, because it's going to break up for any moment. As soon as Lizzie is gone, and bless her, by the way, your kingship, because I think we're recording this in, what is it?
February
20... No, hang on, Martin. This is 2025. And she's been in office now for what? 112 years or something like this, right?
No.
So, Lizzie, if you're listening, well done.
Yes. Yes, it's pretty tough, aren't they?
No, of course, we're calling this in 22, and she's just, what is it? She's been in office now for 70 years, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. There is a change in the public holidays here this year for...
Martin, you are the monarchist... of the two of us, so you should know. Yes, you are.
Well,
it comes with the heritage.
Is it? Okay.
Some people call it to get from the frying pan right into the fire, because you moved from Holland to something called England.
Well, they're both monarchies. Yes, this is true.
Indeed, indeed, they are.
They used to have some nutters in Germany as well, didn't they?
But, but this was before we invented communism, back in the, what, 30s or something.
I remember one of them, they shipped off to Holland in the early 1900s, didn't they?
And this is where the trouble started, I suppose,
very
right?
Popular, yeah.
So, yes, just you're safe blaming it all on the Germans. That's okay, no worries. Just do it.
Oh, it's
never mind whether you're of Dutch origin or living in England, just blame it on the Germans. Always works.
Well, they started it after all.
Indeed they did.
That's for a faulty time.
You see, anyway. Martin, when you think about it, the Netherlands are just a splinter as in a breakaway country of something called the Greater German Nation, no? Maybe I'm wrong. Historians, if you're listening, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu.
Yeah, I'm sure that was mentioned in history lessons in the past. But,
Maybe I got things wrong.
We're all Germanic peoples, right? This is,
indeed, including the Anglo-Saxons and all the rest of them.
Not sure about the Anglo-Saxons. They're not Germanic people, are they?
Well, wait, why would English then be a Germanic language, come to think of it?
Just the Saxons and stuff like that. And they
Yeah,
got
but they
short
all
language.
go back to a common origin, though, language-wise anyway.
I guess English is part of the same
I mean,
group
you
too.
see, there's a vicious group of people around saying that Dutch is essentially a mixture of English and German going back about 1,000 years or
Well,
something, maybe
you got
even
that.
more than
No,
that.
you got that wrong. This is the incorrect one. So, in fact, it's German who is the derivation of Dutch. But this is
How many
a
people
lesser known fact.
did your historians have to bribe for this? I'm just checking.
The facts in the show notes.
Historians, if you're still alive and can tell the and tell and can tell the real story in terms of how much moolah it really costs, the email address is how to bribe a nation at linuxinlaws.eu. Just send a mail and we'll get you on the show.
Sounds good. All right, anyway, but
Yes,
for
of
tonight,
course.
we have a special guest.
Yes, it's us.
Oh, no, you had a special guest on
For a
here.
change, we're just doing a duo episode as Martin and myself.
Yes, but you're going to tell us all about static site generators, if I'm not mistaken.
And I'm afraid you're going to ask the questions, right? That's
I
what
can
I'm a
ask
little
questions.
scary
That's
about
fine.
it.
That's not a problem. That's a problem.
Okay, Ken, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are,
He's been
this
waiting for this
episode
for a while,
is
hasn't
indeed exactly this is your episode. As the other avid listener will recall, there was an episode in 2021 where we interviewed our sponsors, namely Hacker Public Radio, in the shape of a janitor called Ken Fallon. And we mentioned the way of how to set up a website in the modern world using a static site generator in terms of moving away from CMS system as in content management systems, and the advantages, let's put it this way, of how a static site generator works and how it basically integrates with the version and control system. Because HPR has this sort of thing in the making for a long time, but apparently Ken and friends haven't just gotten around to implementing it. So this is a little bit of a word of advice in terms of how to do it, maybe also of how not to do it, and maybe some of the caveats and maybe some of the tricks and benefits
Just,
of how to do this.
you set this up for the user group in Frankfurt.
Yes, the Linux user group. Yeah, exactly. We did it about a year ago, maybe 1.5 years ago. Yes, in contrast to our normal episode, this will be quite a long episode. We are editing this probably down to an hour. Maybe 2, finally. Sorry, HPR will edit this down to 2 hours. The original episode will
No, they
probably
don't
last
have
about 5 hours.
some music to the front and
Yes,
back as well. They'll
exactly.
make it longer.
They normally do. Yes, no jokes aside, we keep the shot rather short and sweet. Needless to say, people, if you have questions or any general comments on this, maybe you know a better way of how to do things, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. So, Martin, why don't you get us started with telling us a little bit about the current challenges of something called delivering content to the greater masses? Why don't you start with a couple called Adam and Eve?
We could do, but it may be quite a long story.
We do have the time, don't worry about
I'm not
it.
entirely sure, Adam, and you've had any requirement for site generators or sites in that matter altogether.
Okay.
They had other things on their mind at the
Apparently, Martin is not game to let us in on the full story. So why don't we start with giving the appreciated audience a little bit of an overview of how things were done in the past. Let's start with the notion of a legacy content management system, as in what a CMS really is. So, Martin, what is a CMS really?
Well, as the name says, it's a content management system.
Excellent, excellent. We're making progress. Very good.
Well, you can imagine, take a news site like BBC, for example, right? They have a lot of content that gets added on a very regular basis, and clearly you don't want to end up. I'm making some jumps here, but all this content has to be easily managed and can be easily added in a automated way, right? You don't want to end up typing a bunch of HTML to create a new story every time some news happens. So that's just really the role of the content management system, is to automate that piece where content is just delivered in text plus pictures, and the CMS takes care of producing that in a consistent sort of format that applies to the, let's say, the rules and the formatting and the view that the site is trying to represent in a sort of couple of sentences.
Martin has, that was very spot on, Martin. Martin has captured quite a few elementary traits of a CMS. First of all, a CMS takes care of producing content most of the time dynamically, i.e. somebody as a reporter or something like that goes to the site, enters the content, typically in a markup language like Markdown, HTML, you name it. And then the content management system takes care of the rest, i.e. taking this Markdown, translating this into HTML, and pumping this to the internet. The trouble, of course, that takes time. In addition to this, CMSs normally have a role-based access control model in terms of not everybody is allowed to edit the overall site. Some people are just allowed to enter content, but do not change the structure of the site as such. Some people are only allowed to view the content as maybe proofreaders, and then feed the corrections back to the original journalist or something like this. And of course, there are also administrators who can administer the site, i.e. change the structure, change the layout, change the templates, and all the rest of it. So normally, CMSs are quite complex beasts in terms of setting things up, resource consumption, network bandwidth, and all the rest of it. Typically, these content management systems, I'm just mentioning a few examples here, like Joomla, like Typo3, like Drupal, were written in a scripting language. Not to forget, of course, Moin Moin, like Python, like an example from the Python space, but normally were written in a program language that was dynamically invoked as part of a web server deployment, like Apache, Nginx, you name it, but had the disadvantage of really being very resource intensive, disk-wise, as in disk capacity-wise, CPU-wise, and all the rest of it. Plus the fact that for each and every page invocation, if the content management systems wouldn't cache the contents had to be regenerated from the markdown that somebody entered. And as you can imagine, this is quite a time-consuming process. So deploying a CMS, running a CMS on your typical server infrastructure was quite resource-intensive. So that's the reason. But of course, there were also a couple of benefits to the CMSs. Like most of the CMSs would support versioning. So if a journalist would go into the CMS, would type up an article, then this would be proofread, then the proofreader would feed back any corrections to the journalist. The journalist would automatically work on a second version of the content and so forth. But Martin, you had a question, interjection, or amendment.
Yeah, so I mean, why don't you name some typical CMSs, right, that people will know and be familiar with?
Martin, I just did. Did you doze off again?
You didn't mention any names.
Drupal, Joomla.
Oh, Drupal, yeah. But
Moin Moin.
The most obvious one is something like a WordPress, right? That's
Yes, Martin. Thank you.
Sorry. Yes, you did. Yeah.
So, Martin, what is WordPress then? Tell us all about it as you're running a couple of WordPress sites.
It's just an example of a content management system.
Very good.
I'm sure everybody is familiar.
Because I'm the weirder of the two of us. I normally start with the most complex things, whereas Martin normally takes care of the simpler examples. Ooh. Exactly. No, jokes aside, people, WordPress it's probably fair to say that WordPress has been one of the primeval, for want of a better expression, CMS systems. So it started out as a simple blogging system, but over time it evolved into full-blown content management system over the years, because you can get plugins, you have different editors at your disposal, and the rest of it.
Okay, so how does this relate to static site generators?
I was just getting there, Martin.
Okay.
Now the problem, of course, is with the with the traditional CMS approaches is, as I said, they're pretty expensive. They're complex beasts, hard to maintain, and slow. Not too sure what CMS the BBS runs. Do you know this? I think they have at least a couple of WordPress sites out, right?
Maybe
I'm wrong.
What they have in total, but
BBC, if you're listening, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. We can sign NDAs if required, so just please get in touch.
It's a little bit tricky within the podcast, though, isn't it? it's a very sort of silent episode.
Well, we have been known to be censored before. I'm joking. There was this Microsoft episode that never was released, right? But let's not digress anyway.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway, going back to the much more important topic of static site generators. So quite a people finally got around to, well, I wouldn't say noticing the deficiencies or the shortcomings of these traditional CMS systems, but clearly looking for an alternative. That brings us back to the Lux story. Moin Moin, which is a Python-based CMS, had been in production, rather, before we put this to rest, as in sunsetted it, for at least 10 years at the local Linux user group that I'm helping out with. It is actually written in Python 2. The problem was that, as probably most of the dear listenership knows, Python 2 went out of, I wouldn't say out of existence, but went out of support, that's probably the better expression, early 2020. So no security upgrades, no further versions. Actually, there's a PEP out for it called, funny enough, PEP 404 published. PEP, of course, means Python Enhancement Proposal. It's an RFC-like process where the Python community actually works on furthering the language. So links will be in the show notes. It's essentially a collection of improvements for the language and its ecosystem.
Touched on the Python episode.
We did indeed. So if you want to know the further details, just go back to the Python episode. Links will not be in the show notes, so you have to go back to the back catalog now to search for it, or use your favorite search engine to find this episode. The corresponding PEP is 404, published I think in 2008. Links may be in the show notes, where Guido von Rossum, who is the original Python inventor, and friends said there won't be any Python 2.8 release, so Python 2 died essentially with version 2.7. That was in 2019. Mm. Now, the drawback with Moin Moin was actually that they had started a Moin Moin port version 2 from Python 2 to Python 3. Uh-huh. But there were a couple of dependencies that were never really ported. So, because I was one of the maintainers of the CMS system for the local log, I took a look, and that was around 2018 timeframe, give or take, at the remaining packages that hadn't been ported to Python 3, and simply said, in 2019, I'm going to take a stab at it and port the remaining packages from Python 2 to Python 3 so that the project could close this delta and then move on to a full-blown Moin Moin version 2 with proper Python 3 support.
They should have called it Moin Moin 3, but yeah, sorry, carry on.
Well, they didn't. But then life hit, and I didn't have any time in 2019 to conclude this effort. The Lux, as in we then were facing the issue that Python 2 was going out of support, and we wanted to move the website to something different. So we checked out quite a few CMSs, but none of them would fit the bill. And then some hipster, a member of the LUG, came up with this notion of a static site generator. So Martin, why don't you tell us what you know about static site generators in contrast to CMSs?
Well, as the name says, it is not, and well, you've already alluded to this, it's no longer a dynamic process of generating a page when the demand is occurs for content. It's all pre-built, right? So you have content templates and pre-built into, but the generator does the generation of the HTML for the, whatever is going to be requested beforehand. And so it's when the request is made, it's just purely serving up the page rather than doing the dynamic version that CMS does.
And that concludes today's episode. Thank you for listening. No, Martin spotted it actually quite well. No, Martin, I couldn't
name for this. It's a brilliant name.
No, seriously. I mean, you missed a few days, but essentially, that's pretty much it. So the idea, going back to so comparing our CMSs to static site generators, that's exactly what Martin said. Essentially, CMSs regenerate the page based on requests, but a static site generator simply takes the markdown. Pretty much, it's like comparing an interpreter like Python to a compiled language like Rust or C. Yeah. So a static site generator basically takes the markdown and converts this into HTML and CSS, of course, as in cascading style sheets, which essentially is the templating engine behind style sheet language, i.e. what gives HTML the looks, let's put it this way, simplified version, and generates these based on the markdown language that it's presented with. So you take the markdown language, you take some templates, you feed this into a static site generator, and out comes CSS files and HTML files. You put this onto a web server, and then you have a static site that can be delivered to browsers lightning fast, because you don't have to generate the content on the fly like a CMS does, but rather it's pre-built, it's predefined, and it can be delivered statically. And that's the big difference between traditional CMS and static site generators. Of course, the static site generator misses a very important feature. It doesn't do versioning, and it doesn't have any notion of users, access control, and all the rest of it. So quite a few smart people came to the notion of, or came up with the idea of combining a versioning control system that has all these traits or features and actually a site generator, meaning you use your version control system, and as part of the commit, push process, whatever you want to call it, based on your particular versioning system, it regenerates the static website on the fly. That's the general idea behind combining a version control system and a static site generator. Needless to say, the LUG Frankfurt wasn't the first one, or wasn't the first group that came up with the concept. It's a tried and tested concept. It has been done before quite a few times, but we simply borrowed the idea and never gave it back. So what we did, we combined something called Gitea, which is essentially a Git front end, like GitLab, like GitHub on a commercial basis, and something called Yugo, which is a static site generator written in Go. Quite a few people looked at other approaches, like what's it called? Lector, it's Python based, something like Pelican, also Python based, and a number of other approaches. Okay. But Yugo made the mark in terms of convincing with speed, resource efficiency, and at the end of the day, easiness of use. So what we did is essentially we set up the GitHub instance. Of course, links will be in the show notes. We set up the GitHub instance. We defined the users. We defined the rights of the users, as in who has access to the repository, who can clone the repository, who also has write access in terms of pushing any requests as in pull requests back to the site, and then a so-called webhook. I'm going to explain what that is in a minute. Takes care on each and every delta check-in of the modified content of regenerating the website on the fly. A webhook, and this is pretty well documented actually in the Git documentation, but also in the derivatives like GitHub and so forth, or GitLab for that matter. A webhook essentially allows you to incorporate, I'm tempted to say, plugins before a commit, after a commit, and during a commit. What we essentially did is we told GitHub, now look, if somebody with an SRS, of course, pushes back a change to the server, take this change and rerun Hugo on the fly, meaning that essentially a contributor can modify the website based on his local copy, which he or she has, or it, because we are inclusive, has generated on the fly by simply cloning the website. He can then use a light HTTP Nginx or even Apache instance on his local laptop or machine to try out any changes before committing it. Once he or she or it is satisfied with the changes, he simply commits and then does a push to the GitHub server. And as part of this push, authorized, of course, Hugo is involved and regenerates the website on the fly. And that's pretty much it.
Excellent. So, a question here. Is the webhook piece the extra bit that GitHub delivers you over any other version control system?
No, actually, Git already defines webhooks. So, full disclosure: when Martin did our beautiful website, I supplied the Git instance. And if you take a look at linuxinlaws.eu, we do not use a static site generator, so we actually hack the website ourselves. So we edit the HTML code, and I'm almost tempted to say some scripts that also take care of the HPR automation do also hack the website, but maybe details in a future show, depending. But the point is, once either Martin, myself, or any script does a Git commit, a webhook also runs on our server and essentially incorporates that change into the server-side HTML. So a webhook is already present in Git. It's not GitHub specific, it's not GitHub specific, it's not GitLab specific. It's just a piece of automation, plugin-based, that runs as part of the overall push infrastructure.
Okay. If you will. Yeah. So why don't you remind the listeners of the benefits of GitHub in this case?
In contrast to native Git, GitHub has a beautiful web-based UI, has a sophisticated admin panel in terms of role control. You can create roles, you can create users, you can attach roles to users, you can administer users and all the rest of it. It's very comparable to GitLab in that matter. As in the community edition, you can download from GitLab.com or whatever it's called these days. And this is, of course, the thing that we needed, because not everybody in the LUC is really that familiar with the command line. And it also allows people to, and this is the beauty, and this is also present on GitHub or other infrastructures, is actually allows you to modify a file on the fly. So in contrast to the ordinary workflow, where you clone a repo, then you make any changes, and then you say commit, and then you say push origin or push master or something like this, you can actually go into the web front end, go down to the file if you have the corresponding permissions, and change the fly. And change the file on the using your browser. So what Gitean then does in the background, it will actually do a clone of the repo, will modify the file based on your inputs, will do a commit and a push, pretty much automatically. That saves you, of course, doing this manually on the command line and also occupying or reserving space on your local hard drive. This is a little known feature that, as far as I know, most, if not all, of the web-based Git clones like Gitea, GitLab, and GitHub do, or offer more or less pretty much these days as an out of the box.
Now, for Canon friends, you mentioned Hugo. What can you say about that in terms of ease of use? That you mentioned it's based on Go and stuff like that. Do people need to know Go, for example, to be able to use it? Or what was the experience with that part?
If you want to use Hugo, all it takes about 20 years of Golang experience, no? So you should be able to use it on the fly. Given the fact that Go has been in existence only for the last 15, that's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? No, I'm joking. Hugo is actually part of most of operating system repositories, so you can install it using your own package management system. If for some reason it's not part of your OS repos, simply clone the code base from GitHub, I think it is, links will be in the show notes, and simply build it yourself. Now Go has come a long way, similar to Rust, I might add, a long way since its inception in terms of building an executable. So all you have to do is basically you have to invoke, I think it's called Go Build or something like this, in the cloned repo. It pulls down any dependencies, compiles it on the fly on the machine where you are on, similar to Rust, and then builds a statically linked executable, also similar to Rust. So that means within no time you have a fully functioning Go at your disposal. Go is pretty powerful. If you take a look at the documentation, it's pretty well documented, has its own templating engine, all the rest of it, but also supports a pretty powerful macro language that, for example, allows you to execute scripts as part of the generation phase of your website. Okay. We use this actually to incorporate, for example, JavaScript code in the statically generated website and some other magic. So it's pretty powerful, and it can be pretty easily extended, but that goes for most of the static such generators.
Okay, so it sounds like you can get by with the macro language instead. Is that fair to say?
I mean, they pretty much work like, I mean, I'm almost tempted to say they are like Python-based web front ends, they are like CMSs, they are like any other framework that you use, or yeah. Even women or cars. Yes. The way it works, essentially, once you know one, pretty much you know them all, because they're very similar. I mean, cars may have different colors, may have different wheel types and size and all the rest of it, but essentially cars get you from A to B. Women, of course, don't get you from A to B, but you get rid of it anyway. Static type generators are pretty similar in terms of they take a markdown language, take a template that you normally also define in a type of markdown language, and then simply generate your CSS and HTML files. Any hate mails with regards to my previous remarks about gender? what's the word I'm looking for? Gender equality, exactly.
Yeah.
Please send that to Martin Visser at... I'm joking. Jokes aside, this is an all-inclusive show. Martin, of course, is now free to make any non-chauvinistic jokes.
You're stuck with the chauvinistic ones, right?
I'm afraid so. Yes. No, jokes aside. It's and I mean the upside is it may sound complicated, but at the end of the day, it's not, because the way you normally do it, or the way we actually did it, we pulled down.
Interrupt. Yes. Why don't you tell people how long it took you to go from where you were before to implementing this piece? Well, just give people some idea about how much effort it took you guys.
About half an hour.
Okay.
Then 50 minutes for QA, and then we were off to the races. Jokes aside. So maybe I should shed some light on how we did it. We, Hugo, like any other static site generators, comes with a few examples that gives you basically a quick start in terms of how a site works, what you have to take into consideration, how the templating works, and all the rest of it. So it's not that hard. So what we did, we took an existing example and simply took the content that we exported from Moin Moin, and that gave us at least the content in a somewhat HTML-based fashion. We then did some automation with regards to translating the existing content to the markdown that Hugo requires, made the changes to the templating engine, did some layout improvements, migrated the macros, as in the stuff, basically the Python-based macros from the Moin Moin site, to the Hugo-based equivalence. That pretty much meant rewriting about six scripts, something like this, six Python scripts into PHP shell and some other scripts that are invoked as part of a Hugo static site generation process. So essentially, these are the macro definitions you put into your site, and as part of these macros, Hugo detects these macros once it comes across them and invokes the corresponding plugins. It sounds complicated, but at the end of the day, it's not. It's pretty straightforward. We have about 30 pages. From the old website, it took us about, I reckon, in total, about a man month, not even full time. So I reckon within 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks full time, the whole content had been translated. The macros had been converted, as in migrated, as in translated. The layout had been migrated, and the site had been QA'd, as in tested.
Yeah, nice. And presumably you're going to put the link to the website in the show notes?
Absolutely.
Mm. Okay.
So the point that I'm making is, never mind of what static site generator you choose, simply give it a spin. They are not that hard to set up, and most of them, I looked at Pelican, Somebody else looked at Hugo, somebody else again looked at other site generators. We agreed upon using Hugo, but then once that decision had been made, the learning curve was, I reckon, a weekend, and then you were off to the races.
Nice. Okay, excellent. So, Ken?
Take note.
Yes. Well, mind you, there's probably a few more pages on HPR, but
looking at the HTML code on HPR, it shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah, no,
so Ken, get in touch with cheap. Sorry. We have a very good cost efficiency ratio. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway,
okay, Martin,
any final questions before we get to the sponsoring feedback and some other sections?
No, I think that was a very nice summary on the subject. So well done. And check out the
links in the show notes, yes.
Yeah, indeed.
And that brings us nicely to the feedback. So, Martin, yes, why don't you give it a shot? Since I've been doing all the talking tonight.
I guess that's only fair. Mind you, it is quite a long so, yeah, so we have feedback on three episodes in one, as in...
From who?
from Biku.
Yes, our favorite listener.
Well, our favorite listener in terms of providing feedback as well.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so he has feedback on three episodes. First one is episode 44 around, that was Pipewire, if I'm not mistaken. And he found the interview with Tim Waymans fascinating and informative. So for some reason, there is a fact around the world record for solving the Rubik's Cube, because the guy had a similar name to Wim, which is 5.09 seconds, apparently, which is my record in, when I was 14, 12, was something like 45 seconds. So that's...
Yeah. And this is known as a fun fact, of course.
Yes, fun fact. Okay, so on episode 45, he had quite a nice comment, actually. Never before did I think that The Matrix can be any good without Neo, but you proved me wrong. Interview with Neil Johnson was good.
There you go. Thank you, Biko. Indeed. So if you can drag Neo along, we are more than happy to do a rerun of The Matrix episode. Resurrections or not?
Good thinking. Yes. Okay. If you're listening, Neo, get in touch. Well, of course he's listening.
Or Trinity, for that matter. Because, as I said previously, we are not gender biased. Very important.
Okay. So final bit of comment from BQ is on episode 46. And he has an interesting comment here saying that this is the type of content that sets the Linux apart from the other Linux related podcasts and make it quite unique. Not sure if that's good or bad, but
it's good. I think it's good.
From our point of view, it's good, obviously. Yes. So really, really educational and informative and so on. This was the PBB episode, and he has some comments on our Dark Side Techsport, which he says he's missing.
Yes. So, why don't you read this up, because it's worth though I think Margaret Thatcher has died already.
Margaret Thatcher reminded me of that amazing Dark Side Techsport episode featuring Liam, I think, and the election results.
That was the first Dark Side episode. Yes, it was. Very important. That was where Dark Side became A, part of the Mac, B, important, and C, eternal, I'm tempted to add.
Yes. Anyway, he's asking for more Dark Sides. So
how much money did you give him?
We don't.
Must be quite a lot, right? Or did marketing do that deed?
I'm missing something here. That's like an interesting business model where you sponsor your business.
No, Martins, do spill the beans.
Yes. Anyway, he says, keep up the good work. So thank you, Biku. Sorry. There was another comment about the pronunciation of Gittia or Git-T or Guy-T or etc. But it can all be solved by visiting the website where it is explained how it is pronounced.
Yeah. It may be Gitti, it may be Gitea, I do not know.
Well,
so Gitea people, if you have a thought of this, you have a feedback and little silos on you.
Indeed.
And okay, so before we go into the boxes, needless to say, jokes aside, anybody listening, insects,
anybody listening?
Animals, females, diverse, neutrals, is that what I'm looking for? It doesn't matter, men, women alike, diverse, whatever. Do send feedback to feedback@littlesinlaws.eu. If you want to send us money, I'm almost tempted to say Patreon, but I haven't set up the Patreon account yet. So just send an email to sponsor@littlesinlaws.eu. We will get in touch. And with that, on to the boxes, Martin. What's your box?
My pox is, I guess it's, I have to say...
Let me guess, Margaret Thatcher.
No.
No?
Oh, actually, I have more than
Queen Elizabeth?
One, which one shall I choose? Interesting.
Prince, what's his name again? Andrew? The philanthropist?
No.
Prince Charles?
No monarchies involved.
Since you're a monarchist, exactly. You're disappointed.
It's hard to choose, actually.
So many topics to choose from.
No,
even outside that. Let me guess. Prince Harry, the Breakaway.
Is he still a prince?
I do not know. You tell me.
He came out. I don't know.
Well, apparently he has married outside the whatever Ufa gentry. Maybe not. And much more importantly, he has defected to a breakaway nation called the US of A.
Or if I'm completely colony.
Mistaken. Yeah, former colony, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. All very disappointing, I'm guessing, but hey, what do I know about royals?
More than I do by the sound of this. Yes. Okay, I'll choose one.
Have you cancelled your Hello subscription, I wonder, Martin?
I don't have one.
Martin, you can tell the truth. The last time I visited you, you had it on your table. You had it on your coffee tables.
But
you see, that was only the last 20 years.
I thought your plane reading on the plane.
You see, I never ventured into your cellar to discover the backlog, so I don't know.
Excellent. No, you don't want to go there.
No, I don't. That's it. Okay, back to the boxes.
Back to the boxes. Yeah, I'm going to go with Reacher, actually.
With what?
Reacher.
Reacher?
Jack Reacher. It's a series on... it's a bit like
what
Tom Clancy-like, but it's not by Tom Clancy. But
Jack Reacher?
Yes.
Why don't you enlighten the few listeners who do not know who that is about the details?
Okay.
Some sort of cheap action serial?
Well, you're probably familiar with Tom Cruise, right?
Oh dear.
Tom Cruise is not in it, because it's not a movie; it's a series. So
Tom Cruise is a series. I thought it was an individual.
No.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, Tom Cruise is not in the series called Reacher, but he did make the movies with Jack Reacher as the main character.
I see.
And these are made on books by a writing person.
Like an author?
Yeah,
excellent.
Anyway, the new series is it's quite amusing. It's light entertainment, let's put it that way. It's entertaining, yeah.
So how many IMDb stars we're looking at? Two? Maybe three?
I don't get
it. It's light entertainment.
Because they're reliable, if you ask me.
They're not. I thought there was crowd intelligence work at work. No?
Oh, no, but they go by the... this is the thing about anything ratings-based, right? You get ratings from people who rate things, good or bad.
And not the general average
people that don't give ratings. So you end up with a biased view of a rating, unfortunately.
So Martin, that means you have finally revamped your bots and B, improved them.
Therefore, ignore all ratings or reviews.
Especially if done by bots from Martin.
Make up your own mind and decisions on these things.
I see. Okay. In that case, basically, I'm gonna refer to a movie too. It's called The Comeback Trail. As Martin said, ignore the ratings on IMDb. I think it clocks in at 6 or 7. I would give it an 8, to be honest with you.
Robert De Niro.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Right.
Robert De Niro plays a failing producer who comes up with the idea of making some money that he uses or will use to pay back a mobster. And he does so by coming up with the idea of doing one last gig, as in producing one last film, not with the intention of putting this onto a silver screen, but rather cashing in on the insurance premium of one of the main actor dying.
Right, and
as part of the movie production,
this is an accidental death, is it?
Yes, funny enough.
No, it's one of the most. I mean, you're looking at Robert De Niro as a producer. Where you're looking at what is it? It's not Thompson, but help me out here. If you're looking at the IMDb page already,
what's the question?
There's the antagonist is Hunter Thompson. No, it's not Hunter. That's an author.
Tommy Lee Jones, Morgan Freeman.
No. Let me look at myself. IMDb, and it's, I don't want the chip on my tongue, about a minute ago. It's Tommy Lee Jones, of course, playing the actor soon to demise.
Same.
Now, of course, this death.
Four.
Sorry?
Famous for?
Quite a few movies. I'm tempted to add. No, you don't know Tommy Lee Jones?
No. I'm asking the question. What's he most?
No, famous? I mean, no. It's. I mean, you're looking at what? Man in Black.
Yes.
Best example.
That's the one. Yeah. Well done. Just checking.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, what I was trying to say before Martin rudely interrupted me. Jokes aside, no, it's one of the best darkest comedies that I've seen over the last couple of years. I'm tempted to add. It's just a few highlights. The film starts off with Robert De Niro and his sidekick, essentially his nephew, sitting in front of a cafe, and a couple of nuns are protesting in front of a cinema against his last movie that tanked. And then they come up with this idea, or then Robert De Niro comes up with this idea of actually recruiting an actor that is soon to be sunset anyway. So they go into this retirement home and just try to pick an actor. And without further spoilers, needless to say, Tommy Lee Jones doesn't die, but rather...
I think that passes as a spoiler, actually.
Okay, so... But, okay. Watch the movie yourself. Tommy Lee Jones doesn't die, neither does the character that he portrays. Just watch the movie.
They'll all live happily ever after.
Exactly. Well, more or less, anyway. And, of course, if you're a fan of Morgan Freeman, he's also in that movie as the mobster.
Many other
basically, yeah, who,
movies.
Yeah, who Robert De Niro actually owes the money to.
Okay, cool. Sounds good.
And that's pretty much it for my pick. As I said, don't miss this. It's very funny.
Good. Alrighty.
And with that, we are almost done, right?
Almost.
Yes.
Oh, did we miss something?
No.
Okay.
And then we're done, yes. Very good. Thanks for listening, as usual. And
see you next time.
See you soon. This is The Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.